Accession number 24187, reel 11.
Mr. Percy, reel 11. What are your memories of the day or the time when war was declared over, when you were told it's finished?
Well, the war was finished, like, and of course the High Tides were celebrating, as well as us, like. Everybody was celebrating, and we were in this village. Of course, we didn't give a bugger about anything then, like, but the war's finished, like. But we're still fighting in Japan, like. Poor bugger. Anyway, we're just hanging about, like, you know. And then they're coming, we were in this village, I forget what they called the village. And then they said, right, line all the guns up and everything. And the big noise from the, it was Aidan Chief over there, Akak, like. And he gave us a bit of a speech and all the rest on. And he inspected us and inspected the guns. And then he said, we're going to take the guns off here. And he took the guns off us. And I think they went to the Far East, like. That's what we heard, like. And he says, well, you're going to be in charge of German prisoners of war. So they shifted us to Klagen. No, Villach. And they shifted up to Villach, where there was a big prisoner of war camp. And we were, like, guarding the prisoners of war, but they didn't need any guarding because there was nowhere to run. I mean, if they'd run away, they weren't getting fed. And they just had the freedom of the camp, like, we didn't have to guard them. We were there, but we didn't threaten to shoot them or anything like that. There was no fraternisation. They weren't allowed to speak to them, I suppose, they. But we spoke to them just the same. Oh, well, there was a lot of them could speak English. Well, they blamed us for the bombing there. We got the blame of everything, you know. And
in what way? What were they saying?
They said we bombed Germany before they bombed us, and you know, and things like that. And
these were German prisoners.
They didn't believe. They were arrogant, and they said it was our fault. And
were they still arrogant, supporters of Hitler? And what did they say about Hitler?
Oh, they're still, they were the greatest, like, but they had been fighting in Italy, and I suppose if they'd been in Berlin where the bombing was, they would have had a different idea. But they were still arrogant and said it was, they were the best and all the rest of them, and they weren't really defeated, to me anyway. And anyway,
did that cause problems? And if they're saying this to you,
we couldn't get less left. anyway, we were in charge of them, and then the army got round and said, "Right, you're gonna make." There was a hell of a lot of refugees, you know, civilian refugees. So they said, "Right, the winter's coming on, so we're gonna build huts for these refugees." So we got these prisoners of war what could drive. And we got them in wagons, and I took them into the forest to get the timber, and fetched them down to the, what they call them. The timber was from the forest master, and they had their sawmills, and they cut the planks and out for the timbers, and I went with them, and I just left them to the forest master, and he loaded the wagons with the prisoners, and I just got in this. I was in a little German sidecar, you know, and they had a Bren gun, like, and didn't need it because they couldn't gain out if they run away. So we used to fetch them back to this camp, and the other Germans, what were joiners and that, they built the huts for the refugees, and that was what I did for a while. And after that, somebody took over, and we were sent to Rome. I was sent to Rome to a police academy.
Before you go there, was there any attempt to search out any SS men amongst the prisoners?
I was telling you, I didn't tell you about that. There was one place where we were on this Bailey Bridge. It was in the forward area now, just before the war finished. And we're on this Bailey Bridge, and there was an interrogating officer, a couple of sergeants, and the prisoners were marched up to the interrogating place, and there was two blokes on a machine gun, and there were some bodies outside the wall. It looked as though we were shooting the people who didn't speak. This is the crafty, bloody English. And there was a wall like that. There was a Bailey Bridge here, our gun was there. They were interrogating the opposite. And interrogating them. And these Germans were looking at these dead Germans and the machine gun, and they was interrogating. Well, what would you think? Anyway, that was where the British used to interrogate them, frighten the life out of them. And they were all old men and kids. They were only 16, 17 years old.
And these men had been shot elsewhere.
Aye, aye.
They'd laid them there as if they'd shot them.
Aye, they just put them down as though they'd been shot. And it was a crafty, I says, that's a crafty move on our part.
And you're saying they're old men and young
old
lads?
Old men and young kids. They must have went so well. You could see it in their faces, you know. And I think they were saying, bloody Hitler. They must have been calling Hitler, because they were getting 1,000 bomber raids on them, and oh, God. That's when they bombed us. That's why I'll tell you about a mate of mine got shrapnel in his legs. And anyway, these bombers come over, and there was white bandages across the front line, you know, and beyond that there was smoke bombs, and the planes had to bomb beyond them. That was where the front line was. Well, they went and bombed us. And my mate, we jumped into this slit trench, but his legs were sticking out, and he got the shrapnel in his legs, and he went away. But I wasn't touched. I had a bit of shrapnel in the heel of my boot. You know the heel of your boot? I've got a little bit of shrapnel in that. But it was anti-personal bombs.
Were these American bombers?
I didn't know what they were. They were bombing. I think they were American, but they were coming over, and they were supposed to be bombing beyond the smoke. They had white markers, like bandages, you know. And then beyond that, there was a smoke, and they had to bomb beyond the smoke. But they didn't. They bombed it. They bombed us. Where there was bloody British Sikhs, there were some Sikh lads, and got killed. One lad, he was lying there, he was gasping for breath, and there wasn't a mark on him. I said, what's the matter with him like? And he had shrapnel in his back, must have went through his lungs, and he died about a couple of minutes later. And then there was a Sikh, he'd been it. And it's the first time I've seen a Sikh being buried. They took his turban up, and it's got like a big, and they wrapped him in his turban and put him in the grave. Yeah, that's the first time I've seen a Sikh buried. And at least he got buried, not a blanket with his turban.
When you were in Northern Italy after the war, did you come across any of the Cossacks, or people who'd fought with the Germans?
Well, there was some Russians with us in the cookhouse when I was in Rome. And these Czechs, well, they were supposed to be Czechs, had red bandanas on, and like a neckerchief thing. And they were the ones what they'd won the war.
They'd been fighting with who?
They'd been in the hills, like, well, with Tito's lot. And they were rough, pretty look like, but they'd been fighting the Germans. And anyway, they come. I didn't know whether they were Cossacks or what, but they said they were Czechs. But when I went to Rome later on, we had about four lads working in the cookhouse what were Russians. And they didn't want to go home, they're going to be shot. I think they must have joined the German army. And if they went home, Stalin would have shot them. So they didn't want to go home, but now they got sent home. So they were probably shot.
What were you doing in Rome?
Well, we went to the police academy. I'd been with those prisoners of war, and then they said, well, somebody else took over. And it was mostly Germans what were taking over, like, because it was Amgott. You've heard of Amgott, American. It's military government. American military government. And they were taken over, mostly civilians, and they took over the refugees. And we were sent to Rome. We went to a police academy. And were taught, you know, about putting charge in somebody and all the rest of them, and how to write a report out and things like that. But it was useless to us because we went out with a green cap. I was a green cap. I went out with a red cap, and we went and went to Venice, and we were on. You know, I was telling you about the Outer Bounds places. We used to go around where the brothels were, and places where the British troops weren't supposed to be. And if you caught anybody, you know, been in these places, you just charged them, and things like that, telling you how to, you know, and all I had to do was corroborate his evidence. He used to make the charge sheet of, and I corroborated, and that's all I had to do. And we were living in an hotel. We live like lords. We used to get our dobe done, because we wore KD, like, you know, in some towns. And we got everything done by the maid, used to look after us, sweep the floor, make your bed, everything. We lived like lords. And, I suppose it's posterity, this red cap, he was a bigger crook, and he used to gun out. And they used to take, if you've seen an Italian selling American or British cigarettes, they used to confiscate them, you know, that were black and white. But he used to get the cigarettes, come round the corner and sell them to somebody else. That was a black market. And he was in the black market. And I used to get my share, like. But I didn't have to draw any wages because of the money I was getting. So, and he used to close our eyes to a lot of things. But he used to catch one, tuck the stuff up, and then sell them to somebody else. That's the way he used to do it. And we were all in the black market. And
it would be pretty rife out there, presumably. The black market was pretty rife.
Oh, it was worse in Germany, they said, but it was bad enough in Italy. But it was the mafia. The mafia out there as well. We used to go out with a questura. The questura, we worked with, that was the Italian police. We worked with them. And we went out, because we were armed. You know, we had Bren guns and things like that. And they said... they'd caught this gang, they call them the mafia, like. Anyway, they'd been stealing jeeps and things like that, you know. So we went to this field, and they got one of them scammers, you know, bulldozer thing, and they dug the ground up, and there's a bloody jeep. They buried the jeep. They dug a big hole and put the jeep in and covered over. But the questioner, the Italian police, got them. And we got the jeep anyway, and they said they're getting the blokes what had done it. They'll pinch American jeeps. Sometimes they were pinching the wheels. You would jack the jeep up and tuck the wheels up. Oh, they were bloody crafty, they high-tied. But you've got to remember, they were starving. I mean, the one I looked after, like, you know, the power building people, they were starving. And they were in the black market, we were in the black market, and we were living it up. And of course, I was nearly out there for a good while, and then I said there was, after I'd been with her, I got sent back to Klagenfurt on my leave. I got home leave. I got leave in lieu of Python, they call it. If you'd been out there a certain length of time, well, I wasn't quite ready for demob, so they said to me, we'll send you home on a leave. I think I got a month's leave or something, and come home, and I had a month's leave, and I had to go back, but I went back a different way. I come home on the back of a 3-ton lorry, leave in Lower Python, and had the 8th Army leave on the top of the wagons. There was a convoy of us. We all come home, and when we got to Cali, we got brand new uniforms, we got our insignias put on.
You drove through Italy and up France?
We went from Klagenfurt in Austria, right through the mountains with a wagon. We went into southern France, Germany, then into France again. We had 5 stops. We travelled through the day and stopped at different places for the night. Next morning you're up and away again, and you got like a packed lunch. And then you got a mail when you got to the next big camp. Well, it was like an hotel where you stopped. And I got to Folkestone, and of course you were in your scrub. Anyway, they gave you new uniforms, everything, insignias on, you know, all of this. They put you on the boat at Calais to Folkestone. Got up at Folkestone, and I had a revolver. And they said, anybody coming home, got any revolvers, things like that, you'll get 5 years detention. So I tossed the revolver, wasn't mine. It was belonging to that lad that got wounded. I tossed it over the side of the ship. And that harbour must be full of weapons and that. Because they threatened you 5 years old back there. Anyway, when I got to Folkestone, that bus was ready. If you wanted to go south, you used to go to King's. If you wanted to go north, King's Cross. They took you to King's Cross, and other lads went to other stations, like Pancras and all the, wherever they went. And once you were on the train, you were on home. You went home. And that was it.
How did your mother receive you after all this time you'd been away?
Well, my two brothers had been home. They were home at the same time when my eldest brother, he was in the Gurkha regiment. He was a subconductor, which is the same rank as a warrant officer. And he'd been home, because he'd been out there about, he must have been out there about 8 years. And my other brother had been a prisoner of war. So they were home before me. Well, all the celebrations were all finished then. And anyway, I was glad to get home. I didn't think I would get home alive myself. I never thought, when I first went out there, I said, oh, I'll never get home. We've had it here. But I did, I got home. And 5 years of the bloody, it was four and a half. About four and a half when I was out there. And some of them was worse than me. They'd been, the mob I was in, I was in a battery. The regiment had fought in France, they fought in Greece, Crete, North Africa, and Italy. That was the 15, the 52nd Light. That's where they'd fought in France, and they fought in North Africa. Then they went to, what they call them, sent them to Churchill, sent them to Greece and Crete. They come back to North Africa, fought in Alamein, Italy. That's a hell of a bloody. That was a regiment I was in. But I was only a reinforcement. I reinforced them in about April 1942.
Did you get promotion?
Aye. No, I didn't know. When you're out of line, you have a fight, you know. I was in line for the promotion, I think. And anyway, I had a fight with this lad, and of course we got caught fighting, and that was me. But after that, I was quite, I didn't want responsibility. Myself, I didn't want it.
So you came back to Italy after you leave?
I went back to Udine, northern Italy, and I was in the police, same, I went in the same place. I went in Udine. And then I spent most of my time in Udine, and then when my demob come up, when I come on leave that first time, they says, do you want to go back to Italy or do you want to go to Woolwich? Well, I didn't like the bullshit. So what I said, I'll go back to my regiment, what was left of it, in Italy. So I went back there to my group come up, 29 group. Well, I come home in 46. I come home in 45 for my leave, and I finished my time, and I come home in 46. August 1946, when I was demobbed.
Where were we demobbed from?
And then we got over Civvies and that there. Down London somewhere down there. It was down the south. It was a big demob centre down the south.
And you get a medical before you came out to see if fit?
No
medical.
You went into this civilian and picked your suit and picked your trilby and this, that and the other. and your shoes. You got a full rig out, and that was it. You were on your own. You got a furlough home, and that was it. You were finished then. But you put on a class reserve, like, in case anything come up. And that was it. And I come home.
Did you get a gratuity?
We got sixpence for every year, every month you spent abroad. That, a big deal. Sixpence for every month you spent abroad. That was your gratuity. Altogether, it come to 88 quid. That's what I got.
How did you settle down to civilian life when you got out?
Well, I got a job. It was there. I mean, I went in the army when I was 16. The war broke when I was 17. I didn't ever trade. I was a labourer. Well, when I come out of the army, I was a labourer. All I could do was fire a gun. So I got a job as a labouring job. Like, and I worked two or three places. I went to Pyrex, glassware place. I worked on the buildings. I got fed up with that. I worked in a brewery, got fed up with that, and I think I went back to Pyrex. I went to Pyrex, and I was with a lad there. He'd been in the Navy and I'd been in the Army, and we were fed up because the life was, so we had a few jars and we were walking over the bridge, Monk Weymouth Bridge there, and there was a RAF recruiting place. He says to me, "Oh, George, we'll join up." And I says, okay. So we went in this recruiting place, and he says, he joined up for 9 years, and I joined up for 5 years. He was an instrument mechanic, and I went as a driver. And that was it. I went and joined her up. That was 1948. I've been out of the army 2 years, and I went and joined the RAF.
Did you enjoy it?
No, I missed the army. I tried to get me by myself. I didn't have the money though. I wanted to come back in the army, but if I joined the army in the first place, I would have gotten 50 quid bounty. I would have gotten a bounty if I joined the army, but we were drunk. We'd had a few jars, and we joined the Air Force. I went down to Cardington, done my square bushing again, and then I was posted to Wheaton, and then I was a driver, and I went there. They used to be on a camp for 6 months, and then they used to post you. In or off, if you're 6 months posted, 6 months posted. I wasn't on a squadron, I was on the HQ all the time, driving. Well, some of these blokes, I used to, the young officers, were only about 18 years old. Well, I was an old sweat compared to them, and they used to be arguing about sweet points. They like bits of bench, and I just didn't like them. And I tell them mine, when I used to be driving them, I used to have the ribbons up, you know. And what do you think about the air? I said, a load of crap. He said, why? What do you? I said, well, you've got two. I said, you've got the ground crew and the air crew, and never the two ends shall meet. I said, you're going in. I says, you've got milk, and you've got coffee for the air crew. The ground crew only get tea. This is what it was like, you know. And I said, in the army, I said, there's no difference. I said, you're all the same. I said, if you walk 20 miles, the officer walks 20 miles. I said, some of your officers tell me to slow up arms, and I can't even slow up arms themselves. That's the way I was. I was a rebel. And I had 5 years. In fact, I volunteered, I went abroad, and I was in the canal zone. I was in the canal zone from 51 to 53. Then I got demobbed from that. So.
And a similar life in the canal zone. You still didn't like it there either, did you?
Oh, it was better. When you're abroad, it's a different. I was at Ishmaelia, where the fighting was, you know, and we were getting sniped at. And I still didn't like officers, because they never used to come out. We were the ones, the drivers, used to go along the canal, you know, the main road, to Schmeley, places like that, where the fighting was. where you were getting sniped. They never used to come here. All they had was a revolver and a bloke had a rifle. That was your guard. He used to sit on the back of the truck. He had a revolver and he had a rifle. That was it. But he used to have PSI runs. Well, I'd been shifting married quarters furniture from Ishmaelia into the main camps. And we were the ones what were getting sniped at and that. Come night time, they said, Percy, you've got to go on a PSI run. That's a run where they play ping pong and, you know, tennis. And it was night time when they were going to play this other rock team table tennis. And I says, well, I've been out all day. I said, I'm not doing it. Just to be in order. I says, I'm not going to do it. I says, I've been out all day. I says, it's a PSI run where they pay for it. I says, I'm not going to do it. I says, I'm going to bed. I says, I've been bloody shifting married quarters furniture. And I was going to put, they dropped it at the finish line. They were going to charge us, but I was up there. And I was saying, the drivers were attacking most of the brunt. And that was it.